Enterprise Management 360, your main source for tech news, analysis, podcasts, and videos for the enterprise.
Hello and welcome to the EM360 podcast, where we have a weekly conversation with people impacting the enterprise tech landscape. My name's Tom Kroll. I'm an advisor at Lionfish Tech Advisors, and I've worked in the cybersecurity industry for over 25 years now. I'm a former Gartner analyst, and these days I work with vendors to advise them how to maximize their growth. My main areas of focus are cloud-native application protection and DevOps and automation in the cloud. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Sasha Gillinson, founder and CEO of Evolvin Software. And we are here to talk about the state of enterprise cloud architecture. Hi, Sasha.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you on the show today. I'm really looking forward to exploring some of the issues that we're finding with the cloud security or in the cloud digital transformation space, let's say. And the use cases that Evolvin is looking to solve. So without further ado, I guess we can start digging in.
I'm ready.
Excellent.
Always ready. Brilliant. I've been thinking quite a lot about digital transformations recently. I even wrote a blog post that I can't get past editing because it's so brutal. But digital transformation promised to solve a range of organizational challenges. Did it really solve them? Apologies for the leading question there. You might know what I think, right?
It is a loaded question a bit. But to give you a bit of my background, which is relevant to that, I work with a lot of customers, like large enterprises, banks, insurance companies, healthcare organizations, and I do that for over 30 years already. Sounding young, but already grandpa. It is. And one of the things that I find that, first of all, digital transformation came with major promises, right? It was essential both externally for obviously for the customers of these enterprise organizations, but also internally to optimize delivery, to optimize architecture, to increase efficiency, to increase velocity of the changes. And it actually delivered a lot, right? There was a lot of factors that really forcing organizations to succeed in digital transformation, and those that didn't really, are not with us anymore. But
also known as marketing speak.
That's it. But when I look internally, what actually digital transformation is, if we start to decompose that, it's a transition to agile processes. It's automation of this agile development and delivery processes, right? Automation through continuous integration, continuous delivery, CI/CD pipelines, infrastructure as a code, immutable infrastructure, a lot of kind of new technologies, transition to the cloud for elasticity and resilience. It's optimizing and automating processes for delivering more changes more safely, and say more efficiently, higher quality at shorter time. And a lot of that happened, right? I do see organizations, not everyone is 100% there, but I do see, again, large enterprises that successfully transitioned at least part of their workload to the cloud and running, native cloud applications there, that transitioned from waterfall model to agile model and, again, implemented CI/CD pipelines for their application layers and for their infrastructure layers. And the pace of the change increased significantly in these organizations. But what happens, the interesting part is that while a lot of, again, speed and efficiency was achieved, right, and a lot of past challenges were solved, as usual with IT, as usual with technology, new challenges emerged. And new pains were encountered, and new problems are there. And so, did digital transformation deliver? It did. But it came, again, there is no yet silver bullet. And it just came with new challenges and problems to be addressed.
Yeah, it definitely, it solved a lot of problems, and it certainly, there was a lot of promise there, and it's mostly delivered on these promises. We're churning out software faster, we've got self-service, we're taking blockers out of the way. Of course, there are new challenges that come with that. And with that rapid rate of change, then, you know, we have different issues. So that also brings about, how do we manage risk? So, you know, why do you think we need a new approach to managing risk in hybrid multi-cloud?
Yeah. And you know, hybrid multi-cloud, this is a reality after, as a result of digital transformation in almost every enterprise I'm talking to, they do use, still have on-premise, they start moving to the cloud or move to the cloud, but they don't want to be locked with a single vendor, so they use multi-cloud strategy majority again. And again, with this transition to the hybrid multi-cloud, the process has changed. So, you know, we all know well the ITIL process. Let's take change management process, right? And that's one of the kind of principal ways of managing risk in the legacy environment. Right, you know, someone submits a change request. Right, you know, there is a review. There is CAB, change approval board or change advisory board.
This is a history lesson for anybody under the age of 30.
I told that to my grandpa, right? You know, my grandpa.
it's a distant memory for me as well. But I remember change advisory boards.
Yeah, That's it. And by the way, they are still there in many organizations. It's like all these enterprises are still there. It's not like they're completely gone. And they're still there. It just, you know, again, like what goes through them has changed and what the impacts they have. But you know, you have like, you know, this slow and somewhat tedious process, right? You know, where this group gets together once a week and they review all these change aspects and say, well, are we going to do the change? What are the risks? What would be expected impact? How do you mitigate this risk? How do you mitigate this impact? And so on and so on. And eventually approve the change. And then you have a change window. And then you kind of, based on this window, you will execute the change. And this process could be like, you know, it can take weeks, right? You know, to get change through. And therefore you will accumulate these changes. And by the way, the side effect of this is that people will try to shortcut. And that's how unauthorized changes appear. Like, you know, you'll try to shortcut the process, right, and you will find a way to sneak, you know, changes in production. You really need to do that.
Don't they?
And that's different, right? Now, if we say that, you know, you're not working the same way to cloud, because otherwise, you know, again, the speed is lost, right? You know, the velocity, the elasticity, you know, you lose all this if you do that. So again, you switch to the continuous integration, continuous delivery pipelines. You automate your delivery process. And in many cases, I see organizations that, you know, move from one deployment on the weekend, right? And not a continuous, exactly this, continuous delivery, right? And now it's will be hundreds of deployments per day in production environment. So obviously, non-human can sit there and watch the risk, right? So who is watching the risk, right? Is it up to the developer?
Often nobody.
Exactly. and you know, I talk to some organization. By the way, a lot of these organizations are, it's kind of also appropriate, I think, culturally, are based in Europe, right? You know, the European financial institution, European insurance company. As I say, yeah, you know, this should be, you know, this risk management should be democratized. And meaning that, you know, the team that like responsible for this particular component, for this particular application, for this particular piece of infrastructure, you know, they have good intentions, they want the system work, so they kind of will assess what's important, what's not important, what's risky, what not, and they will support the environment, you know, and support their piece, ensuring that it works. Reality is different. Yeah, people are, you know, they have good intentions, but, you know, good intentions are not enough. You need to understand the entire architecture, you need to understand the entire environment, you need to understand who does what, right, you know, to assess the risk right way. You actually need to kind of have the right experience of being able to assess the risk. So you cannot leave it, I think, right? And of course, you know, again, you need to train your developers, you need to train your DevOps people and so on, and they participate in this process, but they couldn't be solely responsible for risk assessment and risk management. Now you cannot go back to CAB, right? You know, so again, you need something new. That's what I'm saying. You need something that will support this velocity of the change, but at the same time will help to identify the risks and mitigate them before issues do happen.
Yeah, that really resonates with a lot of my research in cloud native application protection and cloud security posture management. And we need to take context from multiple points of telemetry and then put them into a digestible form that business leaders can understand and cloud professionals or even the developers that day-to-day work purely with code maybe and don't deal with the infrastructure can understand that we can actually make effective decisions in this hyper-complex adaptive system that we call hybrid multi-cloud. So I'm guessing that this was the inspiration for the development of Evolvin.
It was, in a sense, actually, to kind of another history lesson, right? So for a long time, I worked for a company called Mercury Interactive. And again, for those in the industry, probably can remember the name. It was acquired by HP in 2006, and then the software moved, the Mercury software was sold by HP to Microfocus, and recently it was sold to OpenText. So it actually exists till now, but just changed hands a couple of times. That was a pretty long time, almost right after the college. I went to this company and stayed there for almost 14 years. And part of my work, and I did everything there from engineering, to customer success, and at the time it was called technical account management, pre-sale sales and so on. Almost at every point, in my career, I was exposed to the customers, right? Those large enterprise organizations where we try to solve problems by improving, automating, quality management and automating performance and availability monitoring and automating governance. That was like what this company was doing. And so I saw all these challenges of quality, of performance, of security and so on. And what was very interesting is that almost every time when something was happening, and it was, to the extent as problems were happening, to the extent that you can be in the meeting with, VP operations, CIO, and suddenly like knocks on the door and say like, oh, we have P1 incident, most critical incident. Everyone runs around like, the bridge, and you already have the room that let you in. And people start asking, starting investigation, asking questions. The second question, in many cases first, who changed what? Who changed what? It worked, an hour ago. Who did it? It worked an hour ago. It worked 5 minutes ago. It doesn't work like someone changed something, right? And
who's to blame?
Typically, like people, no,
who
did changed anything. We didn't do anything. And then people go back to service desk, back to idle process, like let's start to dig into change requests. And suddenly, in the end, after, hours, there's like a face palming moment. Once I was like, oh, I forgot, we actually touched this, but we didn't open the change request, and we did this, and it was a very small change, and nobody saw that it will have an impact, and everyone screams at this person.
I've looked through the logs, and I found out. You thought you might get away
exactly,
with it.
Exactly, exactly. And the funny part, right, that was quite some time ago. If you look today, by the way, almost every week you have some news about the outages, about huge problems in telco, in technology giants, and banks. Well, AT&T happened just recently, right?
And I've seen that this week.
You look what happened. Typically, there is always a small note, right? And after this original news, the company that had the outage publishes a small note saying, like, it happened because of this and that. By the way, AT&T was a software change, right? A software update. And so it continues happening all the time. And so my question was at that point, like, okay, there are so many tools in IT and they are developing all the time, right? And the processes evolve and the environments and technologies become more resilient and architectural evolve, happening all the time, right? How come that at every stage, again, like one of the first questions, what changed, nobody knows the answer, right? It's not in the service desk, it's not in the logs, it's nowhere, right? Out there. And I looked around, the problems was really pervasive, and that was the inspiration for the development of Evolvin. And we started at a time when cloud was only starting, with automation, agile was only starting, it was only beginning, and we just saw that the challenge, as I mentioned, just evolved, right? And now it shifted, the use cases adjusted, right? And now the fat finger problem of manual deployment changed to, I just coded something wrong, right? And now this is not what I expected outcome. and so on. But the bottom line is still, you know, something happens. One of the first questions, one of the first investigation steps is like, who changed what?
Exactly. And, you know, for everything that's great about automation and DevOps, it can really just mean that one small configuration mistake gets broadcast across our entire infrastructure.
Exactly.
So the focus on getting things right first time, almost every time, certainly increased. And I think that's really one of the things. I mean, I've taken over 1,000 calls in my advisory career, and the challenges that large organizations are facing these days essentially comes down to managing these hybrid multi-cloud environments. Is this complexity the focus that Evolven is aiming to tackle? And I guess we've kind of covered that, and I guess we can say we can go on to talk about can we dig into how does Evolven solve this complexity, and what's your approach to tackling this random spread of cloud sprawl that's everywhere?
Yeah, exactly, and you are absolutely right. You know, it's complexity, but it's also velocity, right? You know, because again, there's a number of factors, right? And now the complexity definitely is one of primary ones, because you have, again, you have multi-cloud, you have different technology. In enterprise, you typically heterogeneous technology. Even if you refactor or rewrite your applications, right, you don't do it like, you know, everything in the same technology. So you will have a mix, and you will still have some legacy, and you have a native application, you have something in the middle, and you will have, you know, containerized environments and non-containerized environments. So it is, and they all talk to one to another, right? You know, that's always typically the business service will include many, many different components from many different systems and technologies.
With non-standard APIs, talking the same language, without
exactly.
using the same technologies and creating okay.
Exactly.
Something baffling.
But it's also velocity, right? And as we said, it's just, you know, on top of this complexity, now we are changing this all the time. And it's also changes that happen, you know, from, you know, coming from initiated changes, you know, coming from developers, coming from infrastructure people and so on. It's also automatic changes, because, you know, if you really leverage, you know, cloud environment capabilities, then again, for self-managed, automated, scalable, elastic environment, there's like tons of changes that happen. Just, you know, because the environment is regulating and managing itself. But it's also organizational challenge, because if you think about traditional enterprise organizations, five, 10 years ago, there was a lot of centralization, right? And you have centralized technology infrastructure team, centralized or whatever, you know, a global technology infrastructure team, whatever you call them, right? But there will be a central team that will be controlling, you know, your infrastructure, will be controlling deployments, will be controlling application standards, application architecture. And with the digital transformation, part of this transition to agile process also decentralization, right? The application team is responsible for their component. You develop your microservices in, let's say, microservice architecture. You have platform engineering teams that actually create this platform for you. You just, you know, push your updates for your microservice. And generally, if your architecture is decoupled, right? And if your microservices are properly decoupled, yeah, you know, it should be...
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. Which obviously, like, you know, it's not really the case. As complexity grows, right, you know, and velocity grows, you know, then new dependencies are created as a way you didn't predict or expect, and impact is much broader than just specific component. So the decentralization then becomes a challenge, because, okay, if I'm responsible for my components, I don't really know what happens in other components, right? You know, and I don't think that I impact them, and I do, right? You know, so decentralization is solved. So what Evolven does, like, you know, that was not the question. The question was like, what does Evolven do for solving this complexity, velocity, and organizational challenges and so on? So we actually have kind of, first of all, we came up with this approach of saying that, first of all, data is a foundation, right? And you need to have the right data. You need to have visibility into what happens in the environment. Remember, I mentioned that, you know, we started with this question of what changed, right? And what changed led also to the question, okay, what my configuration state at all, right? Now, I have, you know, a dynamic cloud environment. So what is my state at any point of time? What is my state out, like, you know, in hybrid cloud environment, not necessarily in public cloud, but in my on-premise environment and so on. So what is my state? What is changing? I need to have visibility to all of this. And what we found is that there's actually no single tool or no single technology that gives you this single pane of glass. Right? You will have native cloud tools that will take care of themselves. You will have CMDBs that will look into major components of the environments at high level. You will have file integrity monitoring tools that will look for whatever integrity of the files, but nobody actually looks and across entire environment, application down to infrastructure, all the components, right? From, you know, application artifacts to middleware to databases to operating systems in traditional environments to Kubernetes clusters and nodes and Docker images running on top of this to cloud accounts, subscriptions, and native resources, and whatever is running inside the compute, cloud compute resources. Like, nobody looks at all of this. And I said, like, and its reason is it is very difficult to get all this information together. And really, one of the things we said, you know, is a monumental task, but we'll need to address it. And one of the things that Evolvent did, and we actually developed the technology that allows us to bring this information about the very granular configuration state and all the changes that happen across this entire configuration state, across the entire end-to-end hybrid cloud, right? On-premise, legacy system, new system, again, native, public cloud, whatever, you know, get the information, get the visibility. So that was part two. First of all, know what happens, right? So whenever someone says, like, okay, so what changed? Oh, we have an answer across the entire environment, right? You know, what's the configuration of this? Oh, we have the answer. Like, what's the difference between this and that, right? You know, it works here, doesn't work there. Oh, we have an answer, right? You know, why? Because we have all this information. So that was a step one. But the step two.
So we're normalizing the changes across multiple silos, where these were once silos of risk that existed by themselves, and a lot of teams didn't used to speak to each other, let alone collaborate with each other. And as a business leader, it was very frustrating to try and find, you know, what is the overall risk of my environment, given that this team is saying this, this team is saying this, and how do we not create this normalized layer across application infrastructure layers? And yeah, you're speaking my language 100%.
Right, exactly. And you talk about the risk, which is step two for us. We said, like, we have all this data, right? But that's actually a lot of data, right? If you think about, we have customers where we detect on daily basis 5 million changes per day, right? Where we collect billions of configuration attributes, right? Yeah. So as a Evolvent solution, I would come to the customer and say, like, oh, you have, I know, even not 5 million, you have 100,000 changes. It's like useless information.
Yeah, it's a, right. And okay. What am I supposed to do with that? You've just given me a million problems that I didn't have before. Like, what are the three things I need to do today?
Exactly. And you give the answer to that question, right? You know, concentrate, like, focus on risk. So this is a step two for us, say, okay, we'll take all this information, let's prioritize it.
Yeah.
So how do you prioritize? You prioritize it based on the risk. What is the risk in this context? It's essentially a likelihood of configuration, a certain, you know, configuration state or change to lead to some trouble, right? You know, being this security or compliance or even stability, right? You know, stability, compliance, security, actually change can have all this impact. Configuration can have all this impact. So if you can say that, well, we have 5 million changes, but here is 50 that you need to take a look at because they have potential, they look abnormal, you know, anomalous, abnormal, and they have a potential to cause some kind of issue. I don't know what the issue will be, but they don't look good, you need to take care of them. That's already manageable, it's actionable, right? And if you also provide a context for this risk and say, oh, this is risky because this change was executed by Joe without proper authorization, okay? Or, you know, this is a new developer that touched certain package that, you know, this developer was not supposed to and expected to be touching, right? You know, that obviously this is risk. Or, like, you know, this you know, you created an update, an application update, and you tested it, and it failed, and you fixed and tested, and it failed, and it fixed and tested, and failed. That's another example of risk, right? So using, you know, this risk analysis to highlight the information that is, you know, becomes actionable, that was step number two. And now how to do that?
Actionable is exactly where I was going to go with this. Prioritized actionable alerts. And the amount of times as a security guy, I've said, look, this is a vulnerability. It's exploitable. You need to patch this. And the developers, it's not really their job to necessarily know how to do that. If you give them a tool and lead the process, then you reduce that mean time to remediation or mean time to fixing these problems as well. I think that's a really useful concept that you're going with there.
Absolutely. And we saw that, right? You know, we saw that as soon as you add this, like, again, like prioritization, mm-hmm. suddenly data, again, becomes useful.
Yeah.
The question, the big challenge, and as we spend years and years, and we have a number of patents for that, was to how do you actually calculate risk? Because traditionally, risk was either, like, you know, a gut feel, right? You know, it's like completely human assessment.
I think we called that qualitative risk, didn't we?
Exactly.
Ask your tech guy, ooh, and he sucks in through his teeth and says, that's going to be bad, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And more experience this guy has, like, you know, more interest he's got. And the other way was like, let's create a set of fixed rules. I think it depends on the business criticality of this particular component, on time, or who does what. Again, doesn't caching, you know, it's not flexible enough, not accurate enough to estimate risk correctly. And so the way we, kind of the solution we found was in machine learning and later, you know, AI, and with generative AI, actually, we're now taking this to the next level, where we can find, you know, patterns of how your change typically works, what impact it produces, what is normal for your environment, what abnormal in your environment. And doing that, you know, with combination of some statistic analysis and heuristic analysis as well, you can actually come up with a pretty decent assessment that cannot be done manually, too many data points, too many changes, right, in order to process. But this risk will be much more accurate and much more precise than what a human can estimate by, again, relying just on their gut, right, or using fixed rules. So this risk analysis, ML, AI, eventually, you know, risk analysis was a huge breakthrough for us in making the data, the already unique data set that we were able to aggregate, making it useful for this large enterprises running hybrid multi-cloud.
Absolutely. I really like the way that evolving, certainly in the messaging, makes this distinction between machine learning and AI. I mean, for years as an analyst, you'd never trigger a yawn sooner than by mentioning AI to us. It was very hand-wavy. It was very, you know, our AI is better than this AI. But what I like about Evolvin is that you're very specific about, we use the data for machine learning to make these patterns. And we use AI, or generative AI, for specific purposes that it's appropriate for. And you make that distinction. And these things go hand in hand. And one of those could be maybe that the AI is almost a co-pilot to interpret the data. Or it can be used for specific detections. So maybe we look through data and look for patterns that may indicate that this data is sensitive on a number of different levels, and we can make learning models from that. But I like the way that you're very specific about the use of which technology and where. And I really do. I've been pushing vendors and end users for a long time to identify the right products to cope with this cloud complexity. So I'm very happy to hear this development, Sasha. It's great news.
Thank you. And you know, my background is engineering, and I actually have like applied mathematics and discrete mathematics, computer science, and AI and ML were part of what I was studying. So I'm trying to be precise. ML is just one branch of like artificial intelligence, a broad category, and ML is just, you know, one of the areas within AI.
So okay, well, we can get into regression analysis another day, but I have a neuroscience background. But so that was fascinating. That's absolutely fascinating, Sasha. And I'm very happy to have spoken to you about this today.
Thank you for an opportunity to share that.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you coming on. Also, thank you to everyone listening. We hope you took a lot away from today's podcast. We'll be back next week with another episode in our podcast series. Until then, make sure you subscribe to this podcast on all major platforms. Follow the conversation on our socials at EM360Tech on Twitter and LinkedIn. And for more great daily content, head over to em360tech.com.